guys. This is the Puppet Parent Podcast, Episode 9. We're going to be talking a lot about D&D today. Also, interactive CD-ROMs from the late 90s, 80s cartoons that were clearly made in other countries. Stick around. All right. How's it going, everyone? Hey there. Hi. Ooh. Hey there. Welcome to the Puppet Parent Podcast. Woo! Episode 9.
Hi, everybody. Do you want to do the YouTube one on your phone so that we can see these comments on YouTube?
Yes. And actually, we should be getting... hey, guys.
Hi.
I'm Chad. This is Z.
Hi.
We're married. We had babies.
Oh, boy.
That makes us parents. We're also puppeteers. We're going to do a podcast. This is episode number 9.
It's Sunday.
We're broadcasting live on Facebook and on YouTube. So facebook.com/WonderSparkPuppets. YouTube, just search for Wonder Spark Puppets on there. It'll get you there. You can check us out on puppetparentpodcast.com. And we're listed on Spotify, Overcast, Apple Podcast, CastBox, etc., etc., etc. You can find all that information on our websites. Yeah. And if you... hi there, Karen. If you
Karen
comment,
took one of my PDs, one of my professional development workshops. Hi, Karen. Nice to see you.
Yeah, we're doing this every Sunday at 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Please join us, and we would love to hear what you have to say. I'm going to turn down my volume so you don't hear little bumps, but we will be watching the chat box.
Yeah, people chat. It goes click, click.
Oh, yeah.
Can we see the chats in YouTube too?
It should be. It should also pop up right there.
Oh,
but I will tell you,
okay.
We do not have much of an audience on YouTube. So.
Well, you never know. Somebody might be like, "Hey, why aren't you responding?" Or something.
Let me tell you, the one consistent comment that we've gotten on YouTube mm-hmm. for like posting our weekly DIY workshops and our Friday at 11 o'clock puppet shows, there's always some spam bot. That always gives a website, a certain website, and always have to go in manually and be like, nope, goodbye. Oh,
so weird.
Every time.
I've never seen that happen.
Nope, and no one will either.
But I moderated the comments for our last live show, and it never happened.
On YouTube?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always like after the fact.
Oh, after the fact.
Yeah, it's always like after it's done. Yeah, so hello to everybody, and hello to Karen.
That's Ooh. Her first one.
Wow.
First podcast of ours. Well, we've been doing this for, this is our ninth episode, so we're pros now.
I'll drink some hydro to that. Ba-bing.
I got tea.
Yeah.
It's Sunday. You guys, we did it. We made it through another week
mm-hmm.
and weekend. And here we go.
Yeah, here we go.
Should we center some more?
Yeah,
is
that's
that what
right.
you're trying
yes.
to do?
So we're okay. if you're watching this... You're doing this live. So, this week, it was a crazy week. Not so much a crazy week for WonderSpark.
What do you
but,
mean?
Instead of, like, doing a lot of shows for people, I was busy building a slam piece.
Mm-hmm.
So, I took all my anger and all my frustration, and I was like, bam, I made something, birthed it out. And it was part of the Puppet Showplace Theaters. Yeah, that's right.
This I'm wearing
is
the shirt.
Puppet Showplace Theater
Represent.
Bat Signal that Z's wearing on her T-shirt. Yeah, and it was part of an evening of like, what, 15 different acts?
It was a
like
bunch
that.
Of different short pieces. Mm-hmm. I don't remember how many, but we love the Puppet Showplace Theater. Wow. They're out of Boston. They mm-hmm. are one of the country's oldest, longest-running puppet theaters, and it's a theater specifically dedicated to puppetry, and they bring in touring puppet companies from all over the country and all over the world.
Yeah.
And they also have works for adults. They do workshops. They have an artist in residence. All sorts of amazing things happen there. And tiny factoid, it was actually the very first place that I ever performed live professionally where I got paid. So, as a yeah. puppeteer, and it has a very special place in my heart, Puppet Show Place. And so, because Chad performed in the slam this past weekend, or Friday night it was, right? Was it Friday night?
No,
Saturday. Saturday night. So, last night.
Yeah, literally.
Oh, my God.
Less,
I can't
24
even.
Hours ago.
It feels like a year ago.
Yeah.
Chad performed in that slam last night, and I wanted to wear my t-shirt from Puppet Showplace because I love Puppet Showplace so much. And Roxy and the team from the Showplace, if you're watching this, we love you. We love you guys so much.
Yeah, and it, what's really cool about a slam is that a lot of your friends also perform in the slam. And it was like, because it was like 15 pieces, it was way more than you would ever see at like a normal puppet slam. Or like an evening of adult short puppet, you know, shows. You get like 6 to 8, maybe, sometimes 10, never 15, you know, and never like just one after the other after the other. In like a regular puppet slam, like when you're out and about in an actual theater, maybe we'll see that in a couple years.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're in Asia right now, then you're just like business as usual. We'll just hose you down before you go in, take your temperature. No, usually it's like, okay, you have to bring all your stuff onto stage quickly, and a couple other people who are like waiting to do their acts also drag your crap on, and you're setting up while the host is in front of the curtain vamping in front of a spotlight.
Or there's a musician playing or something like this, yes.
And then it's your turn, and you go, and then everybody claps. Wait, great, this is an amazing short piece. I'm so glad we're all drinking right now. That makes it so much easier. And then you have to take your stuff off of stage, and somebody has to clean up. Like, all the stuff that is strewn everywhere, you have to get it off. And somebody gets their stuff on. And so there's always, like, 5-ish minutes in between acts, you know, depending on what kind of an evening it is. But this was just, like, boom, 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 like, one after another.
Yes, and Roxy did an amazing job emceeing, so that was really great. And, you know, Chad, can you want to talk a little bit about the piece that you put together for that?
Yeah. I could almost show, you know what, I don't have it queued. I don't have it queued up, but I will, if you're watching at home.
Now, this is a piece for adults. We should clarify. Wonderspark Puppets creates works for kids.
Yeah, hold on.
Chad and I, well, he is blocking my face. Hi, everybody.
Yeah, sorry.
Chad and I are our own people, and we make work for adults sometimes, and because we're artists. And so Chad made a piece for the slam. I would have liked to have made one too, but I'm just so busy right now with parents solidarity.
So I'm gonna play this on mute while we chat. Is that okay?
Okay, yeah, I think that's fine.
I was very angry when I decided to make this piece, and I would suggest you watch it with the sound on. Well, we were not playing with the sound, but it was like I wanted it to be like an animated political cartoon. Like a political cartoon you see in like the Sunday Times or something, but where everything's labeled, because in political cartoons everything has a label and everything's like the metaphor is clearly spelled out for ease of public consumption. And so this is my big like middle finger to the people responsible for all the terrible things happening in our country at the moment, and I think it's pretty obvious who I'm pointing that finger at. But I wanted to do a toy theater style, but eventually I was just like, you know what, that's just too much work. I don't have a photocopier.
We already have a stage.
Yeah, and I'm already good at hand puppets, so I'm just going to do that. I know how to make them quick out of like hot glue and felt, and Z with the assists stitching together the bodies. Yeah, but so that I'm just going to... Wait, you guys should just watch it online. Just watch it on Facebook.
Where would they find it?
So if you go to Facebook, just go on our website on Facebook. So facebook.com/WonderSparkPuppets. And we posted it there, so you'd be able to find it. You know, if you search through our stuff.
Wait, it's posted on WonderSpark Puppets page?
Oh, wait, you know what?
No,
it's not.
It's not.
It's totally not.
No, so where would they find it if they wanted to watch it?
Well, you know what? I just posted it on, like, my personal Facebook page.
Is it public?
Yeah.
Okay, so if you look up Chad Williams with a top hat, a red top hat.
That's right.
Fiery flames coming out of the top hat.
Yeah, you know, that's right. We didn't post it on our Facebook page because we didn't want to sully the brand.
Well, because WonderSpark is... for kids.
Yeah.
And this is definitely a political piece. So,
right. And maybe it looks like it could be cartoony and silly and for kids.
But it's not. Yeah. It's not intended for that.
Do you hear that alarm?
I do.
Yeah, I'm going to go take care of
that. Okay, cool. That is parent duties, guys. Yeah, our kid has an alarm clock now because he's had one for a while, but all of a sudden he became very interested in how it works and how the alarm goes off at all sorts of hours. Isn't that awesome? For those of you who don't know, we have a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old, and it's crazy right now. How's everybody faring? You know, while Chad's gone, I'll just talk.
I'm coming back in.
Oh, he's coming back in. Chad's awesome. He's been doing a great job at dadding.
Oh,
no. And
what have you been saying that you have to compensate with? Oh, he's great. Oh, no problems there. Definitely not a fixer-upper like that Frozen song.
No, I was just saying
guilt's face. I was guilty.
I was just saying that Leaf now has an alarm clock, and yes, that he has been enjoying exploring that. But it means that the alarm goes off at all sorts of hours, all the hours. Move my arm, okay? Yeah. Guess I won't do that.
I don't. You know what? I don't like when I was 5, so I lived out in the country. I felt something stinging in like the back of my neck. The very back, and I splat it, and it was like, oh, it's something, and it was like slimy and mushy, and I brought my hand in front of my face, and it was covered in blood.
Ew.
My blood, or something, you know, it's like a big mosquito or something, and it freaked me out, and I screamed and ran into the house, you know, and ever since then, like, I don't want anything touching this area of my body. It was like the primal fear, like, you know, everybody has a memory. The first time they ever saw their own blood, right? Like, I think it sticks with you somewhere. I mean, I definitely remember like the first couple times I was like, like cut my finger open and I was like, I'm not gonna live forever. Oh,
you know,
this sucks.
I don't know that I remember my very first cut or something like that, but I do remember like the first thing that left a scar.
Oh, okay. Was it like cool? Was it like macho? Was it like it was a bear?
We were staying with my parents in a hotel either on the way to or from Florida because my Aunt Betty lived in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow I tripped in the bathroom and there must have been like a little sharp piece of linoleum sticking up and it went right into my knee. And I still have that scar. Oh. Isn't that exciting?
That is definitely not the kind of like manly macho blood drawing, you know, scar scenario.
No, I think I was 3 and I cried a lot.
Aww.
And and we were on vacation, so I don't think, and it was the 80s, so I don't know that we had much by way of repairing, you know, like bandages
so,
and
of
stuff.
Of course you got a scar.
Yeah,
because you just couldn't fix it in a way that
what was the 80s? What were they gonna do? Spit on it and
just suck it up.
Yeah.
Sack it up, 3-year-old.
You know, let's go watch some Falcon Crest in the bed with some ginger ale.
Let's watch some Murder, She Wrote.
Club soda. I hope my mom's watching.
You know what's awesome? Rewatching.
Mom, if you're watching, you can corroborate. You can verify this story. Say, yes, that happened.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but we want to hear from you. So do you guys have like a primal story like that, like your first scar,
what a weird thing,
or your first blood or something. Say, hey, check it out, there's your mom. I remember that.
See? Happened.
Yeah.
Truth. We're just spilling truths here.
Well, that's nice. It was just like, oh, these truths. Oh,
there they
man.
Are everywhere.
It's like the truth infomercial. You can't hold all these truths. Oh.
Well, now we need something to solve that problem.
I think this is it, this podcast.
Oh.
This is the truth.
That we're answering a need.
Well, it's like the truth holder honor, right? Because we're speaking our truth, and then the internet's forever, apparently.
That's what they say.
Yeah, until who knows.
Until it's not.
Yeah, until it's not.
You know what's not forever? The Donnie Darko movie website. There is an archive of it, but I just want to say that I found out a few days ago that if you go to DonnieDarko.com, not there.
Oh my God, I wonder what happens if you... Is the Space Jam website still on?
I don't know.
I'm going right now. No, so I'm sure it was the same with Donnie Darko. The Space Jam movie website, which is one of the first websites...
About a movie?
Ever.
Yeah. Oh,
ever,
just ever.
Ever.
Oh.
Has been running on... Like somebody forgot about it, and it's just been running on Sony's website. since 1997 or something like that in the pristine late 90s website. And it's just like, it's just there. And people just, every once in a while, people are like, hey, remember that website? Well, it's still going.
I always loved the Donnie Darko website because, well, I loved the Donnie Darko movie at the time that it came out. And then the website was like so cutting edge at the time that it was released because it was really utilizing, it's still there.
Check it out. So spacejam.com. It's hard to see, but like, yes, those are GIFs floating in a background that's just like a small rectangle multiplied, you know, just like looped over and over and over and over. Oh, I love websites. Like, look at that.
But if we could talk for a second about I'm in mourning about the Donnie Darko
website. I have this background on my website at members.aol.com/whatever it was. Anyway, yeah. Donnie Darko.
GeoCities. Yes.
No, GeoCities. Pshaw.
Anyway.
Angel Fire is worse.
No, somebody was referencing something, and I was like, oh, Donnie Darko. And so I went to link the website, because I still think that website was so cool. And then I was like, oh, no, it's not there. But there is an archive of it. Somebody has created an archive of the website, which That's I was nice. Relieved about. Because it's definitely, like, a really cool... like experience of the film, and I was a media arts major, so I loved like multimedia and using computers as storytelling, the idea of using a website as a storytelling device, and that website I felt like was such a great example of that. So anyway, if you wanted to geek out and watch Donnie Darko and then go to the website, you can still find it if you Google Donnie Darko website, and then you'll find an archive of it.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you have to wear headphones because the soundscape of the website is very good. It's very well intentioned. If anybody who was involved in that could listen to me telling you 20 years later that I love it so much.
20 plus. And when did the movie come out?
You know, I remember really like loving it when I was in grad school. Grad school, I think. Nice. Or maybe it was, it was Fredonia.
Probably because... It feels like one of those websites, because our degree at the time was based on the idea that you would send people a CD-ROM for whatever reason, be it's like part of your band, or you're like a director, or a lot of short films on CD-ROMs, and there would be like some kind of multimedia experience on the disc that would just pop up and play on your computer, and you would, you know, it'd be like a really amazing interactive website. Those don't really exist anymore.
Well, there were startups of magazines at the time that were trying to do that, that you would get a magazine CD-ROM in the mail every month, and that you would experience the articles instead of just reading them. It does sound a little funny. But...
Sounds hokey.
And I'm trying to think of the name, because there's one specifically that I had a few... like CDs of, because they were really trying,
like the Haunted Halloween
no
magazine,
that's Haunted Attractions. And that was different.
That sounds like a dating website, actually.
Haunted Attractions.
Yes.
No, that's
like a goth girl.
No, that's probably still going. Haunted Attractions was a quarterly magazine based on like dark rides around the country and around the world. People like me who are really into dark rides, like, so a dark ride is like a ride that happens in the dark, and then you are taken through the ride, like by the ride itself. So like a lot of Disney rides are dark rides, like Peter Pan dark ride. But
so you're indoors, there's no windows, you're not outdoors, you're
right.
You're inside.
Yes, you're inside, like the Haunted Mansion at Disney World.
There's lighting.
Yeah. Yeah, there's lighting inside. Yes, yes. But it's dark because it's theatrical.
Yes.
It's a theatrical ride. So, Haunted Attractions magazine.
Yeah.
Yes, this was different. It started with an L. Like... I actually cannot think of the name of the magazine, but I'm pretty sure
it started
with an L.
I'm sure you will at some point, but...
Yes. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, but those things were so interesting, and the idea of, like, mailing somebody an experience sounds like a really cool, hipstery kind of thing to do. Like, guys, we're going to get a CD in the mail, and it's going to, like, fire up on our computer... And that's the only way you can access something. Like, that's so cool. Like, by today's standards, being able to limit the amount of people who can access something is so hip and so trendy. Yeah.
Well, remember when business cards were CD-ROMs?
Yes.
There was a couple years there where you would get a CD-ROM, and it would literally not even be round. It would be like this rounded rectangle.
Like an oval.
Fill my other side of my rectangle. There you go. Like that. Ta-da. Oh, it's a heart. Aww. Oh, now it's a rectangle. Heart, rectangle. Okay, whatever.
Do you remember when we did this at Madame Tussauds where we got
we got our wax hands.
We got our wax. Wait, you can get, for an extra $10, you could get your wax hands done as part of this deal that they had. And I was like, yeah, let's do it. And you like, and they have you like dip your hands into this boiling wax and hold it there. And the guy's like holding you down to make sure you get like a good amount of wax built up on yourself and then bring it up and mold it into a shape.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember. You know what part I remember the most, though? Not the wax part, but the ice water part before you go into the hot wax, because it turns out I'm very sensitive to very, very cold environments, and it was painful. I was having a very hard time keeping my hand in the ice water. And then when it went into the hot, I was like, this is the best and worst thing that could ever be happening right now. It just hurt a lot.
Oh no, but, so much for date night. Oh well.
Oh well. It was cool though that we went to Madame Tussauds because they had a VR experience.
VR Ghostbusters. When the all-female Ghostbusters movie came out, there was, of course, there was like a tie-in. Like everybody had tie-in.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually a lot of fun.
It was really cool. That was the first walkthrough VR thing, and the only one I think I've ever done, and it was
the first
awesome.
The first of its kind in the West. Now it's like you get those at a lot of different places, like especially in Asia.
I still haven't done another one since, but that one was really cool.
Yeah, I was gonna do it in Thailand with Christina when we went, but it was like the equivalent of $150 in Thailand, and I was like, what?
That's a lot of money.
What?
In baht.
Yeah, it was just like, why is this so expensive? I mean, like, we ate really good. You know, one time we went to a Korean barbecue in Thailand and just, like, blew our daily, I think our weekly allowance for money. Just, like, blew it because it was so amazing. But no way was going to do it for, like, a 30-minute VR experience for as cool as it looked.
You know, that just reminded me that the last place that I ate out before all the social distancing and quarantining happened was I went out with my friend Susie, and we went to Thai food. And I was sitting there, and I thought to myself, you know what? I still remember the two words I learned in Thai, which was sawadika and kapkunka. But the problem is I'm horrible at languages. Like my older son really struggles with handwriting. I very much struggle with languages, and I think that I will probably likely struggle with this my entire life. For whatever reason, my brain, it just does not remember the things. Like, I will remember certain things, but then not other things, and like I just can't string things together. So all I can remember in Thai is kapkunka and sawadika, and I know one means thank you and the other means hello, but I do not ever remember which one. And so then I very confidently said kapkunka after somebody like gave us something, and they were so surprised, and they kind of went ha ha and laughed and waved and went back. And I turned to Susie and I said, oh, I think I just messed that up. And I looked it up, and I was right. I had done it right. So she was just super surprised that I even knew, like, a word. Or maybe I said it wrong. I don't know. But then at the end, I said, kapkunka, and I did a little bow, and they said, kapkunka, and it was, like, so sweet. It was really nice to be able to do that.
You tried.
I did try.
You know, it's so awesome when Westerners try, like, a little bit.
And now that Leaf, my older son, he's 7, he takes Mandarin at his school, and so he has these very basic Mandarin lessons, and I'm starting to try to learn Mandarin, and the way that I get Leaf to do his lesson is by teaching me, because I'm so bad. I know 1, 2, 3, and then for whatever reason, I can never remember 4, but I think I got 5.
What is it?
1, 2, 3 is e er su. Wait, no. Oh, God. E er son. Something. Ooh. Leo. Something. Nope. Done. See? Yeah. And Leaf would be like, good. Mama. Because I just, he's gone over with me so many times. But I can remember maybe one extra number a day in here. There's a lot going on. And I just, you know, there's not enough room for another language. It's like I'd have to delete some important things to make room for the language. But I'm learning to count to 10 in Mandarin. And then a little more than 10.
She's trying, guys.
I or son. But you know what's tricky is that I'm almost positive that in Japanese it's the same 1, 2, 3.
No? It's ich, ni, son.
Oh, ich, ni, son. See? Son is 3 in both of them. And that's so nice. I learned the first 5 numbers, or at least the first 4 in Japanese for Suzuki class, which is a movement class that I took in graduate school. And so I keep conflating the two because they're tonal-ish languages. Maybe they probably sound nothing alike to...
Well, they do have commonalities in their origin.
Okay, so, and you know, my brain, it's just sad in there about the languages thing. I can count to 10 in Spanish very well. Thank you.
Good job. But, wait, maybe slow it down a little bit.
No, don't be mean.
No.
Slow clap means not sincere.
Good job, sweetheart. Thank you. You can count to 10 in Spanish like a champ.
It took a long time. So I do feel proud of that, actually.
Yeah.
And I am going to, by the end of the summer, be able to count confidently to 10 in Mandarin. Thank
Yay.
You.
Yay, that's Leaf, very nice.
My 7-year-old for teaching
me. If only...
And toe means head in
Mandarin. Yeah, yeah. That's cool. Toe.
I don't know. I'm going to try.
Yep.
She means knee.
Does it?
Yeah. She. Happy knees. She.
She?
Yeah. Miss Wen, who is the Mandarin teacher, says happy knees. She. Zhao Zhu is toes.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm learning head, shoulders, knees, and toes. Toe, zhen bao, she, zhao zhu, she, zhao zhu. Is there anybody who knows Mandarin? Let me know how I did there. So this is my quarantine lesson, Mandarin.
Well, I wonder what our audience, what languages you guys have learned recently, because, you know, as like an adult, because when you're a kid, it's like you just like soak it up. You have to go to these mandatory classes in like high school. You know, everybody learns like a language at some point.
Or if there was a language that you could learn that you haven't learned yet, what language would it be? For me, French.
Yeah.
That would have been so helpful. Like multiple times now in my life.
How many times?
I'm going to say at least 20.
Wow,
at least 20 times. Yes, because every single time there's a grouping of international puppeteers, the common language that everybody wants to speak in is French. Maybe the one that they all know is English, but what do they all want to speak in? French. And what do I not know? French. Like not even, hardly any. And I was in France in this past September, and it was amazing, and I was at the World Puppetry Festival, and I could say bonjour, and merci, and merci beaucoup, and that's about it. Un, deux, trois.
Okay.
I can do 1, 2, 3 in almost anything, but then after that, woo! Yeah.
I think that's common. I want to say it's common.
What language would you learn if you could learn any language right now?
I mean Japanese. But yeah, I've been thinking about this a lot.
So you could watch all the animes without the subtitles?
Well, I mean, some people do that. A lot of people do that.
I know. That's why I said that.
Because it was the only way to experience a lot of this stuff
before the internet. How it was originally made. Well, how it was meant to be watched.
I mean, kind of. There's cultural differences. Yeah, but anyways. I've been thinking about this a lot. So back in the... I mean, you could say like even back in the 70s. Back in the 80s, back in the 90s, especially 80s and 90s, there was a lot of performance and art coming into our country from Japan. Like, Japan's cultural exports were just rocking the United States. Not so much the older people, but definitely the younger people. I guess, like, maybe in the 80s, like, sushi became, like, a big thing, and, other art forms, but definitely, like, with kids, or like me, like, anime and video games were like kind of this way into this other culture that you knew nothing about. Like, what is so completely different from your country? Something coming in from a totally different country that looks and sounds and behaves differently because it's based on a completely different set of cultural values, especially when it came to detailed animation, which is why some of the best animated stuff back in the 80s came straight over from Japan, you know, or even the 70s, like with Kimba, The White Lion, Astro Boy.
Voltron.
You know, I mean, like, even, like, lower-budget stuff like Voltron.
I just loved Voltron. I really loved Voltron.
But even the, even Voltron just blew anything Filmation was doing, like, that's He-Man, like, just out of the water, or what Deke was doing with, like, Inspector Gadget, etc. Like, all this, like, Western born animation stuff couldn't hold a candle at that time to what was happening over in the East.
Can you remember what the first anime was that you saw as a kid that you knew something was special about it and different about it and that you just wanted to watch it?
Yeah.
What was it?
Well, all right. So two things.
Because I have one and I'm wondering
so,
what yours is.
So when we go to my grandma and grandpa's house, this fancy trailer park gated community down in Florida, you could have a gated community trailer park and make your trailers look really, really nice.
I've visited some amazing trailers.
You don't call it a trailer park, right? No. It's called a community.
That's right.
But in actuality,
mobile homes.
They're trailers. But they're really nice ones.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So you went there.
So we went there. And it was like doubles and stuff. But anyway, so if you got up early enough and snuck over to the TV and turned it on, turned the volume down so you could listen without anybody else, like, you know, waking up and telling you to change the channel, which my grandpa always did, you could watch stuff early on in the morning that no one in the world had ever seen before. That's what it felt like. It was like watching black and white Zorro at like 5 a.m. before the infomercial started. You know, like 30s Zorro. But there was this one show that came out of, I think, Montreal or France. It was probably France. Same company, I think, that did Mysterious Cities of Gold, called Spartacus.
Oh, I remember Spartacus.
And it was like this wanderer who had like a crossbow on his arm, and he was like darker skinned or Native American or something, and he had like two kid sidekicks, and it was like this dystopian apocalyptic future with robots, and he didn't say much, but he was just like this real strong guy who was always gonna try and win. But this is real, just like Mysterious Cities of Gold, every once in a while there's a real horror element to it, mm-hmm. where it was like something really bad is gonna happen, and it's not like, oh no, this is gonna be over by the end of this episode. It's like, no, it was episodic too,
like,
yeah, it was like a serial, mm-hmm. yeah. So a lot of French cartoons,
you know, I had one that I was gonna say, but now I'm gonna back it up and say there's another one. So okay.
Yeah.
So the one that you just reminded me of,
yes,
was Belle and Sebastian.
Oh, yes.
Which was episodic,
yeah,
and like intense and like.
So to describe it a little bit.
Well, it was about a young boy named Sebastian, and he had run away from his, I think, adoptive home to then be, or something had happened to his mother. He couldn't find his mother, so he was with.
What
relatives.
But his mother was, everybody said his mother had died.
But he didn't believe them.
Right. And he was the only one who was like, no, she's still alive. And they're like, right. She's dead, kid.
Right. And so then he runs off into the Swiss Alps. But then there's a dog that he finds, a sheepdog named Belle. And so then they have these travels together. But they're both on the run. Like, there's a loose dog. You know, so people are trying to capture Belle. People are also trying to capture Sebastian.
She was wanted for murder, though. Like, this dog was like this beast. She was big.
She was big.
And, like, lethal looking. And there was this, some kind of, like, miscommunication about, like...
You remember.
Maybe it was like this DMX music video where, like, somebody who looks just like him is wanted for murder. And everyone's like, it's him. And he's like, I didn't do anything. It was kind of like that with Belle and Sebastian. But she was like this maternal... caring,
yes.
Could murder somebody who messes with my little boy.
It was very
dog.
High stakes. It was very high stakes. But then the other one that I originally asked this question about, mm-hmm. was, so do you remember when the Disney Channel and some other paid cable channels, when they weren't on, they would be scrambled? And so, do you know what I mean when I say that?
Oh, yes.
So, like, it was like they would take the color bars that you would see before, like, a show and, like, overlay them and, like, wiggle them around in front of the picture. But then you could still hear the audio from, no, Karen's asking if that show is live action. Belle and Sebastian was animated.
No, it's animated.
And so this thing that I'm describing right now is animated, too. So Disney Channel, most of the time, would be scrambled. And I remember being in the pharmacy, I think it was Rite Aid in my hometown, while my parents were looking for something, and they had a TV on in the Rite Aid. Ooh. And I know. And so I would just stand there and watch. And they had the Disney Channel on, and there was this show on that I'd never seen before, and it had a baby unicorn on it, and it had pink hair and this little horn, and I was just transfixed. The eyes looked just like the eyes from the characters in Voltron that I loved so much. And there's already something very familiar. Plus, it was a unicorn. It was so cute. And so I was just like, what is that? And then my parents were like, no, we have to go.
Yes.
It's time to go. Uh-huh. It's time to go grocery shopping. I'm like, no. I just saw the most amazing thing. And I'm never going to see it again. And then I remember trying to, like, watch the Disney Channel, because I would do that, you know, mm-hmm. through the scramble. Like, I would program it to the Disney Channel and just listen to the Disney Channel. And then one day, they played that film.
No,
and
through the scramble?
I only recognized it because the scramble, like, came together for half a second enough for me to see the unicorn. And I was like, oh, that's it! That's the movie! But I didn't know what it was until I was in high school. Like, 12 years later or something. Wow. And then I was talking to my friend, Bridget. I had a very good friend named Bridget. And I was describing it to her, and she's like, oh, yeah, that's called Unico. And I'm like, you know. And then she's like, yeah, I have it on VHS. And I was like, no. And so I basically, like, ran right home after school with her, and she dug it out, and we watched it together. And to this day, still one of my favorite movies. I've not shown it to the kids because it's a little scary.
It is a horror movie for children.
It's awesome. It's so great. And it's by Osamu Tezuka, who also did Astro Boy and Kimba the White Lion.
He's the grandfather of all anime.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
So good. You can watch it on YouTube, I'm pretty sure.
He's amazing.
So this is Kimba, or no, this is Unico and the Magic Island or something like that.
Well, there's like three Unico movies.
Yes, but this one specifically.
Only one of them is good.
It's the one with Toby and the puppets.
It's so weird.
And you wonder why I became a puppeteer. I mean, it's the one about the puppets.
It's so weird. It's like,
it's awesome.
Wow, there's this cute little unicorn, and he just loves everybody, and he wants to be everybody's friend.
Don't give it away.
And he has, like, a couple friends in the forest.
Just watch it.
Everything looks great. Oh, yeah. And then there's this magician who's turning people to stone, and there's no one left alive in this entire kingdom. And, oh, my God, what's going to happen when these people get to, like, everything is just horrible. And it's
insane
magician is just turning people into pieces of his wall.
Flawed. They are flawed characters. It's setting the stage for greater anime later on.
It's such a great movie. You got to see it.
You.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Yes.
But don't show it to your kids.
No, it's not.
It's horrifying.
It's not appropriate for, like, I'd say 9 and under, maybe.
But it's so easily quotable, too. Anything
so good.
The villain says.
Toby!
Like, oh, God, he's coming! He's coming!
Actually,
hide!
Unbeknownst to us, one of our sons named one of our pets at one point Toby.
Oh, yeah, Toby.
And
we looked at him.
And we were like, oh, no! But we couldn't tell him. So we're like, okay, Toby.
Oh, that movie. You know what Western movie gave me that same kind of horror vibes too was Rainbow Bright and the Star Stealer.
Oh yeah.
Which is like,
we watched that on a Girl Scout lock-in at the YMCA.
So Rainbow Bright, the TV show, was, you know, just like Rainbow Bright and her colorful friends. And they're slaves. they get their little pint-sized slaves to mine the rainbow crystals for them to power their devices.
They're called
sprites. And they live in the nice houses, and their sprite slaves live in the... Anyway, so somebody steals their sprite slaves one day, and they're like, oh, man, what are you going to do?
They're mining the color stars.
Yeah, they get their slaves to go be their somebody else's slaves, and they're like, oh, man, we gotta put a stop to that. And they introduce, like, this... this older teenage girl, like, villain who is very bossy, very 80s girl villain who just wants to have her own way. Anyway, so in that movie, everything's fine until they get to the point where they've brainwashed or mind-mushed some of the characters who you knew and loved from the TV show, and all of a sudden they're not responding to their names or anything. They're just mindless slaves. And just that idea happened in The Dark Crystal. Happened in a bunch of other 80s things where just like, oh, like the main character's losing their mind because their best friend no longer responds to their own name or anything about them, and they have to like snap them out of it, and they can't, and it's heartbreaking.
I never thought about that as being a theme in 80s cartoons, but yes.
People were really afraid about brainwashing in the 80s, which is hilarious because all those people are brainwashed now.
Oh, Chad.
Thanks.
Stop.
Fox News. What?
I don't know.
What?
I mean, not everybody.
No, it's true.
We don't want to be ageist here.
Not everybody. We won't use the B word. Because some people take offense to that. Not the one you think.
Oh, Nick Anderson says Pokemon are all slaves, technically. And Karen says she loved Kimba.
Pokemon is about dog fighting, it's true. But they justify it by saying that the Pokemon are kind of like competitive against each other, and they kind of like all want to fight, so it kind of works out in this weird way. But yeah, you're right, and there's been a lot of talk about that.
Yeah, when the Pokemon Go first came out, PETA was like against it.
PETA's always ragging on Pokemon, but PETA goes too far sometimes. PETA ragged on Cooking Mama, which is this video game about just cooking. And because you could cook with meat, PETA released this whole like anti-Cooking Mama, Mama is like, she's so nice and cute and cuddly and amazing, and it's like encouraging, and it's all about learning cooking skills through a DS. PETA went too far that day.
Oh, Nick says that they weren't. It's not that it was a brainwash theme. It's tribalist groupthink.
Oh, tribalist groupthink.
In my opinion.
Back in the 80s, they're like, if you listen to this message that's scrambled backwards on a cassette tape, it's going to implant ideas in your brain. I guess those people are always kind of dumb and impressionable. But now they're just older and dumb and impressionable.
Well, no. But that's a reoccurring theme throughout history of, like, you know, the young kids are into things the old people don't understand.
Yeah.
And now they're going to hell. Yes.
Yep.
But now I feel like there's a movement to encourage kids to play games like D&D, whereas like when I was in high school, it was definitely like, oh no, only the weird kids playing D&D, and you're not
only the weird kids.
I was not allowed
holding
to play
my hand, no.
D&D.
Oh no, we were totally stigmatized. So I played D&D in middle school, in high school, and during that time, which is the mid-90s to late 90s, they were still talking about, you know, like mazes and monsters, fever, you know, like the devil was going to get on people, and that kids talked about it too, because that's all we knew. We didn't know any of, like, the good side. People didn't talk about it as being, like, creativity and imagination, playground, and... You know, getting kids to just do something together indoors on a weekday instead of being outside causing trouble.
Oh, no. I would go to my friend Sarah's house. We would play with some Ouija board stuff, and then we would do D&D. So, I mean, it was... we were definitely like, oh, is this going to make us bad? Awesome. Let's do it.
Dang.
Like, yeah, well, we were summoning things.
See, what was really dumb was that, like... I think people know this now, but the D&D kids are harmless. They're not the kids that were like
smarties.
Smoking cigarettes like behind the bleachers and getting tattoos. Like the skater kids with the tattoos, those were the kids that everyone was really concerned about, like, or they should have been concerned about. Let's see, who else has played D&D in this chat room? Let's see, Nick Anderson, maybe. Oh, yes. Nick says his mom was like, they're just rolling dice and talking.
You know, Weezer did a reference to D&D on their
Weezer,
first album.
Weezers are nerds, so...
I know. Did you know, I'm almost positive, I should fact check this though before I say it out loud, that they are from Storrs, Connecticut, where I went to grad school?
Yeah?
Yeah,
look,
pretty
you
sure.
Look, you have a device. Why don't we look this up right now?
Go ahead.
Yeah, never mind.
Whenever they reference the 12-sided die in my garage song, I'm always like, oh, if I passed by that house, I probably have. Which garage is it?
Yeah, right. There's probably a specific garage that he was talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. So I would be like driving through stores and being like, is it that one? Is it that one? Which garage is it? You know?
That song was, it had comic book references. It was like a poster of Kitty Pryde and Nightcrawler 2. They're waiting there for me.
It's such a good album. Their first album was so good.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, and Karen Falk, her daughter, did This Afternoon with her college group who are scattered across the country. Yeah, man, there's so many tools for doing D&D online. Although my favorite of all was watching people do it live as an audience member was so fun. And there's many podcasts, like really famous podcasts online now that are just D&D podcasts that are amazing to listen to. I never found the right group.
Me neither. Maybe we should make that happen as adults, or maybe as our kids get older, that will naturally happen for us. That could be fun.
All right. So here's my D&D dating profile, right? So no, because it's, you know, like getting friends, like D&D friends. You want to land with the right click. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's like, it's kind of like an audition. It's kind of like speed dating. You're like, all right, so here's my D&D dating profile. And you can do one too if you feel so inclined. So I like to have a good time. I like to have fun. I appreciate some lore, right? But I also like to be super goofy. However, I don't just like to hee-haw all night, right? No, I like to get to the point, and if you're taking too much time figuring out what's happening inside the rule books, I lose interest quickly. Boom.
I like props. I used to do this show called Little Miss Gamer, and so I would get invited to video game cons.
Yes.
And one time we went to one at
Long Island?
Suffolk, what was that school called? Stony Brook University.
We went twice.
I remember this one time that we went to that one.
Yes.
At Stony Brook. It was a very nice con. It was quite big for being at a university.
Do you remember the name?
The con?
That's where we first met. Fort 90. Himself.
Matt. Yeah, Hawkins.
Matt. Hi. Yeah.
Yes.
What's up, Matt?
Hi, Matt. I think he's a dad now, too. I'm pretty sure.
Isn't everyone a dad at this point? I mean, come on.
No. But I think he is. Let's see. So I remember way back in the back of the big room, they had the D&D tables all set up, but they had, like, real walls. Like, they had created a dungeon with, like, all these props and things and, like, real monsters and stuff. Like, kind of like Warhammer type of things, but, like, things I hadn't seen before, because that's just not the crafting community I hang out with.
Right.
Like, my crafters don't paint miniatures. My crafters, like, build puppets. And
they had the whole table set up.
It was cool.
And maybe what you didn't realize was, like, we were looking at like $3,000 worth of miniatures.
No, I had no idea. I was just like, this is awesome. Look at this. This is like a dollhouse, but it's like dungeon stuff. So
it was really cool.
That's what I mean when I say I like props. So like I liked seeing the dungeon. I liked seeing the figure being in the room and then trying to traverse to the next room or whatever is going to happen.
Yeah. So. Well, that was like a lot of people grew up with something called Hero Quest. Mm-hmm. It's basically that. But it was pre-made adventures. You could go on, I guess, afterwards. But it was like 10 adventures. They'd set up like, here's all the stats. Here's the person who's going to be telling the story. You know, this is your way in to basically like your way into D&D. But what my way into D&D was back in the day, and they've riffed on this since. They've made it actually cool since. But you would get an audio disc with kind of like a beginner's guide to D&D. I think it was like with AD&D version 2 or something. You would play tracks on the audio CD whenever you got into a new room.
Is this like the Nightmare board game?
Yes, except it was just a disc.
Which I love that board game.
So So it was like, you get, the first track was like simulating what it would be like what you are like, getting your friends together. Hey guys, hey, my older brother has this D&D book. Wow, is that really cool? Yeah, check this out. Look, and you can be the wizard. Oh, cool, I'll be the wizard. And you can be, and this is like this audio drama. Right? And then they start doing the spooky voices. They're like, wow, that's really cool. Keep doing the spooky voice. Okay. You look into the castle depths and the door creaks open. You can smell the must of ogre poop. And you're like, wow, that's amazing. But then they would just like do straight, just like character voices after that for like 10 tracks. Right? But at the end of the adventure, like you press play because you've gotten into the final room. Right? And it's Bone Gnasher, the ogre. And I only remember his name because we press play, and all of a sudden you're like, who dares come to the lair of Bone Gnasher? I'm like, oh my God, it's the Macho Man! Yes. It's the Macho Man! Yeah!
From wrestling, if you guys don't know.
Yeah. Everybody knows the Macho Man Randy Savage.
Well, or Snap into Slim Jim.
He's a cultural icon. It's amazing. Amazing. But, It's such a classic moment, and I was so happy. Whenever I hear the Macho Man, I'm happy. But I was just like, oh, this is great. But that was the only one they ever did. And it was kind of like a lame, like, beginner's quest. They since have come back and have redone that quest to make it really cool.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like in video games, too. They're like, you like this? From your childhood, we remixed it to actually make it cool. People who grew up on this, like, helped out to make it awesome.
Do you think they remixed Nightmare the Board Game?
They should.
So, for those of you who never, it is on YouTube, I've watched it, it's so amazing. So, there was this board game that I used to play at my friend Leah's house called Nightmare, and what you would do is you'd have a VHS tape, and there is a pretty, like, not-so-interesting board game that you would be playing, and you would, at the very beginning of the board game, you put the VHS tape in, fully rewound, and you hit play. And then you start playing the board game, and nothing would be happening on the TV for a very long time. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the Crypt Keeper would be like, "Wahaha!" And he'd be like, "I'm here to disrupt your game. Who's ever in the lead? You must do this horrible thing, blah-ha-ha!" And then he would like fade off into the background, and then blackness for a long time.
Total jump scare.
Oh, just loved it.
Everyone's like, ah!
Oh, and it was the best because, like, after you played a few times, you knew that something was going to happen soon. So you'd be like, go, no, you go, no, you go. It's like kind of like hot potato because you knew that he was going to be like, ba-bum! Like, at any second.
Yes.
This is the best.
Yeah.
Nightmare of the Board Game.
It was great. I mean, VHS, I think that was, there's been a documentary, I screened a documentary about VHS board games at our film festival years ago. Oh, yeah.
I'd love to see that one.
They did a great job about, like, going back and interviewing all these people, you know, who had participated. There was, the very first one was Clue.
I was just going to say, wasn't there a Clue one?
Yes. And that was what the majority of this one was. There's been many documentaries about that era, the Hollyweird era. But no, Clue the board game was the very first one. The person who signed up to do it, like elbowed their way into the job and then discovered that they had no idea what they were going to do and basically had to, like, write the entire thing from scratch. But the way they figured it out became like the blueprint for everyone since. And the way they did it was clever in a way that no other one was.
Mm.
And that was, you had just one VHS tape, and instead of having the tape play the entire time, you just had like you had different games.
Mm-hmm.
So you had a 5-minute sequence, and you had to pay very close attention to every single detail that was happening. They bring you through, like, they show you all the characters, and they all have like a couple of scenes here and there, and then the narrator comes back up and he's like, okay, now pause the tape and follow these instructions. And the instructions are based on what you saw or what you think you saw happening, and then you would kind of play like the normal Clue game based on that. Then you go back to the tape and you play it again. He's like, okay, now we're in like scene number 2, somebody has gotten murdered, and you have to try and then, so every time you have a scene, you have to try and remember what happened, you know, way back when you played like the first 5 minutes. And sometimes you could go back and cheat and, you know, and rewatch it and stuff, but like, it was really interesting. And I don't think anybody understood. In fact, when we played it live at the film festival, people were like, what? Like, they didn't quite get... Like, you have to play it a couple times to understand, like, you're supposed to play.
Did you own this game, or did you know somebody that owned the game?
No, but at the time that I was running this film festival for 5 years, a video game film festival, it was newsworthy that somebody was doing a documentary, a good one, on the Clue board game, and that people should understand that if you're into these VHS board games, that this was the first one, and it's one of the most special.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, so yeah. Look it up, Clue the VHS board game documentary. I'm sure it's still on YouTube somewhere.
Is there a game that one of your friends had at their house that you did not have that you really loved to play?
I mean, yeah, video games.
Okay. Well, what was that? Yeah. Or was that just like a general console that they had that you did not have?
Yeah, the Super Nintendo.
Just in general.
Yep.
Yeah. Same, I have to say.
Super Nintendo.
We did not have a Super Nintendo. You know who had the Super Nintendo? Sarah Campbell. You're not watching this probably, Sarah, but we're friends. And you know this because I would come over to your house and just look longingly as not just you played, but your mom and your brother. They all played. The whole family played on the Super Nintendo. And I would just be like, I want the Super Nintendo. And my parents would say, well, honey, you have an Atari. You have an Atom, which was like a ColecoVision computer, and you have a Nintendo. You have enough games. You have enough. You do not need a Super Nintendo. And I was like, but I do. I do. Did you not see the things that can happen? Yoshi exists only on the Super Nintendo. Like, I need Yoshi in my life. And so I would go to Sarah's house and I would just replay the first level of the first world over and over and over again and eat cactuses. That's just what I did. I would just eat the cactus over and over with Yoshi.
That's so nice.
Yeah. Fond memories of eating cactuses with Yoshi. But that was when her mom wasn't playing.
Oh, wow. That's
her mom
cool
was
that their parents
huge
played.
Huge gamer. Well, her dad wasn't home a lot. Her dad was a doctor, so he was off, you know, healing all of Leroy. Mm-hmm. But her mom was home quite a bit with them, and she really liked playing video games. I wonder if she still does. Maybe. And then Sarah and her brother also played video games a lot.
Wow, that's cool. No, for me, it was Final Fantasy VI was like the game. Like, everybody knew. It was epic. The graphics looked like nothing you'd ever seen before. And then Chrono Trigger, same thing. Whereas like when you saw it in action, you just stopped. You know, and not too many games today can have that same... All right, I take that back because that's crap. I want to say every generation, that's video game console generation, so every 5 to 6 years or so, there's a game that makes everybody stop and go like, what is that and how can I play it? And for this previous generation, it was Fortnite. Generation before that, it was Minecraft. You know, the best-selling video games every single generation, every year, are sports games, you know, but which is funny because nobody recognizes that fact. But every generation, every 5 years, everyone's like, what is that? And it's like bleeding edge cool and happens to be a video game.
Well, you know, Nick asks, in what ways does your affinity for D&D flow into your puppetry?
Oh, not at all. I mean, you know, with D&D, there's a lot of improv. So if you're a good improviser, if you're like, yeah, you would adjust to your role in this, but I don't know,
storytelling, voices, things like that, having fun, you know, flexing your creative muscle.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, a lot of very distinct memories in my life have come from D&D sessions. Oh man, did I ever tell you I played D&D with Shale once?
No.
So when I was living alone in Albany, I would drive to my friends' houses, and I didn't know anybody in Albany. And this was like back when we just first started dating again.
Mm-hmm.
And you were in Massachusetts or Connecticut, at UConn. I was in Albany. That's a long drive.
Yes.
You know, so I would have to drive to see my friends. Mm-hmm. So I'd have to drive to Lee, Connecticut, which is a 40-minute drive to see my friends. I would have to drive 4 hours south for parties at Joe Cam's place. Then I would like occasionally drive to like Middletown, New York to see Shale. And one time he's like, hey, my friends, because he's really big into D&D. He's like, hey, my friends are doing a D&D session. It's okay. You just come on in. It'll be a good time. Oh, God. It was like a D&D nightmare.
Oh, no.
But it's like, fair enough. It was not my group. You know? I was not a regular. I didn't know anybody there. I grew to know them really quickly. But it was like I was just jumping into somebody else's session, you know. It was set up so that it would be okay. We played this game called Exalted, which is like, if you want to play not as just like your regular schmuck character just starting out, if you want to play as like a level 9,000 character and roll 20 dice at once when you attack and have that kind of feeling, like this is the game for you, okay. Apparently. One of the guys was like 500 pounds. I never like played D&D with a guy who did not get up the entire time because he was like, he had real problems, but he was really into his character, like really into it. And the way that he played his character was like, whoa, what's happening here? Because it was all dudes, but the people who played the women, everybody macked on them. So it was this weird, interesting thing of like the characters are macking on the female characters who are also played by men in real life. And it was like this really interesting dynamic. We didn't get super far in the game and I definitely made everybody mad.
Oh no.
Because we just didn't jive, you know? Okay. It was like when I perform improv, with my troupe, man, my troupe, my college troupe is still performing together. We're coming up on like 20 years. Pretty soon, we perform together once a year. Even like new people coming in, we all jive super well, and everyone's there to support each other. Here it was just like, everybody's talking, and I'm just trying to get like something in. You know, it's like being like the runt of the litter. Just like, come on guys, just let me in for a second. And then when you do something, everybody's looking at you like, okay. Yeah, like the only thing that I ever, the two actions that I ever got to take in that game were just like, I was so bored that I just started messing around. And people didn't like that.
Yeah, no.
They're like, are you sure? Like, if you try and like rabble rouse the people that you're talking to into fighting against these evil people, they're just going to get wiped out. I was like, yeah, just do it. Yeah, who cares? And then when I tried to, when it was like fighting against the boss of the session, right? Mm-hmm. But they're like, hey, we finally have something to fight. Let's fight it, guys, because that's what you do in D&D, just fight, I guess. This group is really into fighting and throwing 20 dice. when it finally came to term, because everyone's like, okay, I throw 20 dice and I'm attacking with this, and then I get this added to that, and then I get the special bonus because I know all that stuff, right? Came to me, I was like, I'm not going to swing, actually. And they're like, you sure? Like, yeah, why? I hate this person. Because me and this other character were bickering against each other the whole time. It was fun. It was fun to, like, in character, like, bicker against somebody. Like, I don't like you. You know, that was cool. But then when it came time, when that person was getting attacked by this big plant monster, they're like, don't you want to save them? Attack the monster? I was like, no, I hate them. Because the whole time I was bickering. Yes. We had nothing positive to say.
Right.
Yeah, that just like everyone was like,
that didn't fly.
No, everyone's like, just throw the dice. I was like, okay. I threw the dice. It didn't do much damage. And then the really morbidly obese guy was like, who was like, had this like master slave relationship with his princess character.
Oh no.
Was like,
sounds complicated,
I transform
Chad.
Into a half bear beast, and then I do this part of my attack with the bear form, and then it was very complicated, and at the end it was like, I did 75% of the damage. Blah. And the DM was like, I've tricked you because you weren't supposed to attack this, and now you're all infected with plant spores. See you next week. And everything about it was very memorable. Also in that time, I met this guy who legally changed his name to Clock Chaos. And he's like, I'm a before nerdcore rappers were a thing. I'm a nerdcore rapper. My name is DJ Clock Chaos, but you just call me Clock Chaos. And everyone's like, no one wanted to say to his face, that's not a good name. That's actually, that sounds really lame. Don't do it. Everyone's like, you already legally changed it? I'm like, yeah, come on, guys. This is my name now. I'm Clock Chaos because they're like opposites. Sorry, if you're listening, Clock Chaos, I apologize, man. You know, it's like live in your truth. But at the time, I was like, whoa. You ever have a friend who like changed their name to something that you wouldn't change your name to? I don't know.
I don't know a lot of people who have actually legally changed their names, but I know people who have gone by different things.
Yes.
Yeah. Including me. I go by a different name. Hmm. But, hey, do you, not to change the subject, but we're going to probably wrap it up pretty soon. Do you have anything that you're looking forward to for next week? Or anything that you want to comment about the current state of, I mean, we're still living in New York City. We're still in Queens. Mm-hmm. Things here are still really tough. We're still in our apartment. We put a swing in our apartment in the doorway between the kitchen and the living room. Best parenting move ever.
It came with its own challenges.
What?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Because now the swing is used all the time.
It's the best.
I'm just like,
I use the swing.
I can't, like, don't swing while I'm in the kitchen. And they're like, okay, I won't. You know, it's like, I don't want to get hit, guys. Don't swing.
Yeah, but you can always unclip the swing.
Yeah, but I don't want to be that guy.
Yeah, I know.
You know?
No, but it's been really fun having the swing in the house, and there are other attachments too, like a rope and a ladder and a trapeze, but really, everybody just wants the swing, including me. I love the swing. I swing on it every day, and it's great. Mm-hmm. Next week is circus-themed puppets, because we do puppetry workshops every single day, and I will be doing puppets Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and I have some ideas of what those are going to be.
Man, you better solidify those ideas soon.
I will. Don't you worry. And,
No, you're always super consistent.
I bring it when That's it's right. time. They're ready. So, don't you worry. And we have some big things in the works in terms of our life and what we're going to be doing. We'll share more about that next week.
Yeah.
But we have some plans for the summer, and we're not going away, but we might not be here, which will be nice, I think, because
we're going to late dog it on the rich exodus.
Well, you know what? We would really like to be able to go outside. To be able to go outside and just be in some grass and not be concerned about, you know, other people and other people's dogs and people jogging. And so we're figuring that out, and we will tell you more about that next week. But we're in the process of figuring out our summer plans right now. But don't worry, nothing's going to stop in terms of content. We're going to continue to do the podcast. We're going to continue to do the live shows on Fridays and the puppet DIYs every day, just from a different location. And I think that it'll be good for our mental well-being, because being in a two-bedroom apartment when you can't really leave ever has been really taxing on all of us. And we're already... I think that it would be okay if the weather wasn't going to get hot, but even just the last couple of days, the weather got up to, I think, 83 or 84 outside, and it was hot, man. In here. It was like 90 in our apartment, because we're on the third floor. We're right under the roof. It's a three-story building, and it just gets hot. And we had all the windows open, and it was warm. And so, you know, and putting in the air conditioners is a whole to-do. And then once the air conditioners are in, the windows don't get opened again, because the windows that get opened are the ones that the air conditioners go in. So, all that being said, I'm very much looking forward to being in a place where we can just like walk outside or dry our laundry outside or have a little garden, grow some tomatoes and some cucumbers. I took a gardening class from their local library. Learned how to maybe grow some cucumbers with a trellis. So we're gonna be all homemakery.
It's gonna be like Laura Ingalls Wilder.
Well, hopefully not, because she almost died a million times. But I would I would like to flex some of those country skills. I can't think of it. Homesteading skills. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And we're going to bring our cat and our other pets, too. So.
That's right, Aura. There she is down there under this table right here.
Get ready, Aura. You're going on an adventure with us.
Meow.
Yeah,
but it'll be good. Mm-hmm. All right, anything else we want to share before we say our goodnights to everybody? We're doing okay. We're healthy still. I don't think any of our family has gotten the virus, but we don't know. That's the thing, is that we could have had it and be completely asymptomatic, but we've been very, very, very careful. Whenever we leave the house in any way, we always have a mask on. We always are washing our hands. So I think we're doing okay. But it will be very nice to be able to walk around outside in the summer and let the kids like play in a sprinkler every now and then. So.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, on that note, thanks so much, everybody, for watching. If you haven't visited our website for this podcast yet, head on over to puppetparentpodcast.com. Check it out right over there. Boom! There it is, our beautiful website.
Yay.
Love that photo. you can listen to us on... Here it is.
We are not socially distancing in that photo.
No. the good old days before that. You can listen to us on Spotify, Overcast, Apple Podcasts, CastBox. Ooh, burping through that. Radio Public, Pocket Cast, Breaker. Good old Anchor, which feeds all those things, or just download our MP3s over at puppetparentpodcast.com.
You know what's funny is I've been watching like some like silly reality TV shows, and then I'm not gonna let anybody know what trashy TV I watch. But what's interesting about watching them is anytime I see anything that looks like normal life, I'm like, oh, look how normal they're being. Wow, they're just they're just saying hello and shaking hands or greeting each other. Or look, they hugged. Oh, that's so nice. Oh, look, that child is going to school now. Like, I mean, all of these things. And it's like, in some ways it's comforting to watch like old things from another time. And in other ways it makes me sad because it reminds me of all the things that I can't do right now. But we did watch a couple weeks ago. I think we might have mentioned this last weekend. The Jerry Seinfeld stand-up, and that was very funny. The new Jerry Seinfeld stand-up. Very good. Highly recommended.
Then, the other night, we watched stand-up, and I don't think either one of us laughed the entire time.
I didn't really like it. We don't have to mention who it was.
No, it was a very famous comedian who I've enjoyed, you know, when
I'd
they
never
do,
heard of him. He can't be that famous.
I mean, he was playing, like, a huge arena. He's very famous.
I live under a rock.
Anyway, yeah, his first thing was about ripping on feminists, and I was like, oh, all right.
Oh,
and then the next one was ripping on vegetarians and ripping on young people. So it was like, wow, all the check boxes for who I identify as a person, he's just ripping them apart.
Yep.
Aww.
Yeah, but we kept watching, which was also interesting. Like, neither of us was like, let's turn it off.
Yeah, and I think, or neither one of us, you know, I would glance over at you. Maybe if you had glanced over at me at the same time, we would have been like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, I just remembered one thing I want to mention, which was two nights ago, or was it last? No, it was two nights ago, Friday night. You know what was crazy? There was a fire.
Oh, yeah.
It's midnight. We have all the windows open because Friday was the day that it was really hot. And it's still really warm at night. All the windows are open. And I'm working, because I work until about 1 a.m. most nights. And I smell something, and it smells like something's burning. And I'm, like, kind of starting to look around the apartment because it's not going away. And I'm like, I really don't think that that's something inside. I really don't. What could be burning? There's nothing that could be burning. And then I look out the window, and I see a flame coming up over a roof from a block away. And I'm like... oh my God. Oh my God. And so then I run into our bedroom because you can see it better. And I'm like, Chad, there's a fire. There's a fire. And I can see it. And then I'm like texting
Was it midnight?
It's midnight. It was midnight.
She woke me up.
I was scared. I mean, like, how often do you look out your window and you see a fire coming over a roof from another block away? I mean, then I'm like, what the hell's happening? Do we have to evacuate? Is the entire block on fire? Oh, my God. Nah. Grab Aura and the kids. Let's go.
Yeah, fair enough.
So then I text my mom group because I have a mom group text that I'm always behind in, but I text them and I'm like, oh my God, fire. And they're like, oh, let's check community, which, or citizen. Let's check citizen, which is this app that I just call the fear app because it just always tells you all the horrible things that are happening close to you.
Very close to you that you would have never known. Yep.
So I'd never put it on my phone, but then I was like, okay, fine, I'll download the app. And I download the app just to know how contained the fire is. Luckily, nobody got hurt, but it had completely engulfed the entire second floor of the apartment, of this small apartment building. It's like a two-story building. I think there were two people with minor injuries is what the app ended up saying. But now I have it on my phone and I have to delete it because I'm like looking and it's like bling, like, and it's like saying something horrible is happening not too far away. I need to live in ignorance of all the horrible things of humanity so that I can sleep well at night. And I don't know how people can survive with that app on their phone and it going bling, horrible thing, two blocks away, bling, another horrible thing.
Right, right. Because some people are like, ooh, okay. And then take their phones and go out to go look
at the horrible thing.
Yeah, like people would go to the fires or car crashes and like just start filming or, you know, just like contributing because you're contributing to everyone else by like filming it and sharing it on the app.
Well, that's exactly what happened with the fire because the fire was so big. But the thing that was crazy about it is that in all the video footage that I saw of the fire, which was really bad, like the flames were coming right out of the window. Mm-hmm. When he turned the camera to look on the street, there are all these people out on the street from their apartments. None of them are wearing masks. None of them. So that was crazy, too. But you know what? It's the middle of the night, and you forget. You forget in a moment like that. Like, I'm running outside. You forget, oh, my God, we're in the middle of a pandemic. That's right. I'm supposed to wear a mask. You just think, oh, my God, there's a fire. We got to get out of here. You know, what's happening? So, I, you know, no big deal.
That was crazy.
Yeah, it was crazy, but I think everybody's okay.
I think the one positive about that app is because I had it downloaded for a time until there was an incident, but it by like looking around at what everyone was like documenting about like crimes and reasons people called the police and accidents and incidents, it gave me a better understanding of what the police have to deal with on like a daily basis.
Yes.
Besides just like all like the crap that 911 operators have to get called, like some people are like, I can't open my jar of mayonnaise.
Stop.
No, it's really like go on the internet, look up, you know, things people call about, you know, like 911 operators. It's like you call them about like the most inane stuff, but no, it's like wow, police officers and fire, like first responders, you know, EMT. Fire, like they have to respond to all this stuff and like what's happening in our neighborhood, you know, like, oh, it's late night, so there's gonna be some bar fights, right? Or there's gonna be like some domestic stuff, or you know, it's like, you know, things like of that nature. But then one day, oh, don't worry, I'm wrapping it up, you don't have to signal me. Yeah, we're at 117. So no, one day there was a car accident right outside our house and I was not at our house. And it was like ambiguous, but somebody got hit by a car and I called you and you didn't pick up and it was like, oh my God, it's probably not us, but you were with the kids and we had a couple incidents where you almost, and I almost got creamed when we were with the kids.
It's easy to almost get hit by a car here because there's a lot of pedestrians and there's a lot of cars and there's a lot of streets that you're crossing all the time. Yeah. So,
well, not anymore, but you know.
No, still, actually now I'm even more careful because there's so many more pedestrians out on the street and so many more bikers. I was going like 20 miles per hour today. I had to take the car out. It's like my once a week outing in the car.
Yeah.
And and people aren't paying attention right now on the roads. It's crazy. So you have people who are overprotective like me, and then you have the people who are crazy because of I don't know. They're just feeling a lot of big feelings, and they're just like going crazy in their cars. So,
like no rules.
Yes, yes. And there's like bikers. So I'm going really slow, and then there's a huge truck behind me going vroom vroom, and like flashing their lights. I'm like, I can go 15 miles an hour, no problem. Mm-hmm. So. I'll go slower. Is that what you need? Was that what your message was?
Dang.
I wasn't being mean, but also, like, he was not being understanding. Like, there was, like, some bike, people on their bicycles, and it's, they're tight roads. Anyway, it's late, and we should say our goodnights.
We're going to wrap it up. Well, thanks so much for watching, everybody. We'll be back next week, Sunday, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
And if you like all the content that we're creating, please go to wondersparkpuppets.com. And by the way, if you know anybody special in your life who's celebrating a birthday, it can be any age, we do special birthday parties. We can do a birthday party for somebody who's younger, somebody who's older, and we can do a customized workshop to go along with that. And it can all be with people invited from all over the country or all over the world. So you let us know, and we will create a very special memory for you.
That's right. We do shows and workshops.
Shows, workshops, puppet telegrams, you name it.
It's true. All right, on that note, thanks, guys. See you later.
Bye.